Yo, what's good, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Isaiah Kid Podcast. Shouts out to everybody listening. Shouts out to everybody that's been supporting the pod. Greatly, greatly appreciate it. I got a good one for you guys today. I got a guest coming on, a familiar friend of the show. Love his basketball insight. I'm not going to waste too much time getting into that, but I am going to open and intro the pod. You guys will probably be hearing this pod. It'll drop on Thursday morning, May the 2nd. You know, it'll drop then. I don't know when you guys are going to listen to it, but I'm ready. We're going to talk. We have all NBA playoff talk. No NFL, no college. I'm sorry to all of my football junkies. I'm sorry to all of my football gurus. I am sorry. But I do have to do full NBA content. This is a full NBA content episode. Just focusing on the NBA playoffs and so forth. Just the overview. Throughout the playoffs, as the playoffs continue, I'll look to bring on more people with astute basketball minds and so forth. But without further ado, let's start the pod. I'm your humble and high favorite host, Isaiah Kid of the Isaiah Kid Podcast. And we're not going to waste too much time because this is going to be a pretty lengthy pod. So enjoy. So as I told you guys, playoff talk, I was going to bring people on. This is just the first of a few guests that I'm going to bring on throughout the playoffs. I'm going to try to get us another pretty special guest. But I got my guy Najee, aka No Layups, with me. He's been on the pod several times. If you're a regular listener, you probably know who he is, but I will let him do a brief introduction. How you doing, bro?
What's up? Glad to be back. Najee, aka No Layups. I do film breakdowns on YouTube and Twitter. Feel free to hit me up anytime at @NoLayups_NoLayups on Twitter. I'm always down to talk hoops. Your favorite players probably follow me.
Yeah, that's a fact.
Coaches probably follow me. Favorite players, GMs probably follow me and check my phone. So yeah, man. Just hit me up to talk hoops anytime, and shout out to my OBO guys too.
Oh my God. Here we go with this. That was a pretty cool intro. Your favorite player's favorite. Yeah, that was kind of lit. That was nice. I'm surprised you took that route. So I got him on. I've been dying to do some content, especially NBA content with the playoffs wrapping up, starting to ramp up a little bit. So we're about most of the series, or I would say half of the series, are pretty much over and decided in round one for the NBA playoffs. How about just like a quick, brief overview? Give me your take on Phoenix. We'll start with Phoenix and Minnesota. Phoenix and Minnesota series. It was a quick series. Anthony Edwards. I think Anthony Edwards and his superstardom was on display. He took over in a lot of those critical moments and quarters of the series. We saw the depth of Minnesota just completely outplay Phoenix. And it kind of showed, you can have three notable lights out offensive players. But in terms of the Knicks and bolts of the Phoenix Suns roster, there was a lot missing. Can you just go into depth of like just your overall analysis of Phoenix and Minnesota?
Well, I'll start just by saying this. The true indication of a smart person is their ability to learn and admit when they're wrong. I, from now on, will never go off what happened in the regular season as far as results. Maybe schematic, but definitely not results anymore. Also, so this data that supports that as well.
Mm-hmm.
I had Phoenix beating them in like 5 or 6, and not even that I thought they were better. I thought it was a bad matchup because
I agree
they would pick pick and roll them, and they would leave Gobert and drop and obliterate them. But this is what I didn't think about. The offensive rebounding was crazy, and I probably undervalued that because I'm starting to realize instead of looking at points for role players, we really need to start looking at how many possessions they gain you, whether they're stealing the ball, forcing turnovers, rather than getting offensive rebounds, secure rebounds. So net possessions, I did not account for. I thought Jaden McDaniels would be on KD the whole series. And even if you check the matchup data, KD was pretty solid versus him all season.
He was effective. He was effective.
Yeah. I did not account for them saying, hey, scratch that. We're going to put him on Devin Booker. And that significantly took them out the game because Ant had Bradley Beal for the most part in the gulag. And Bradley Beal is washed now. He's probably the worst asset than Ben Simmons. But it's crazy because he had a solid counting series where if you watch the game, it was like, nah, he wasn't that good. But taking Devin Booker out the game and that element of just being able to go berserk besides game four severely harmed them. And also far as the pick and roll coverages, I knew Rudy wasn't a cone. I've been telling, you know, my nerd friends here and there, like, hey, Rudy's actually one of the better Luka defenders in the league, but it sounds crazy. But I did not expect them to switch him so much and allow him to truly display everything he can do on the defensive end. And with him being able to hold his own on the perimeter, kept him on the floor so much, allowed scheme versatility, and also Phoenix just has no rim pressure. And it's only so far you can win with relying on jump shooting. And don't give me Golden State because Golden State got paint touches.
Uh-huh.
They got paint touches. Like, they got paint touches. This team does not get paint touches, and it's hard to rely on difficult shot making over great, great, great defenders. Also, even Cat on KD was solid because even the shots KD made, he wasn't penetrating. He wasn't breaking the defense down. He wasn't causing two to guard one. So that was the biggest takeaway from this series. And I'm going to keep it a band. If Denver plays the way they're playing, them boys not going seven with Minnesota.
I will say this about Minnesota and Phoenix. Phoenix, just, I mean, as you said, their roster, it was very, you could tell that they were missing some size. The rebounding aspect, Minnesota was able to just completely bully them on the boards. And, you know, basically with Durant, Beal, Booker, they all, those three all play not similarly, but they're all looking to get their shot off. No one is willing to do the quote unquote dirty work, the extra things to win at this point. With Minnesota, though, I think they answered some of the baseline questions that a lot of people had all throughout the season about, okay, come playoff time, how is Ant grown as a playmaker? You know, not just, you know, shot creating and get his own shot off. He's wonderful at doing that. But how does he involve everybody else? I know a big question, especially defensively, was can Cat and can Rudy Gobert play at the same time? How long can you play them? Is the lineup going to be effective? What is their most effective lineup? How do they close out games? I feel like in this series, they answer that. Now, answer this for me. In terms of those big questions that a lot of people had for Minnesota, because I know there's some like basketball experts who feel like Minnesota could legitimately get to the Western Conference Finals, potentially the NBA Finals. I don't know how realistic that is in terms of NBA Finals, but I can see a scenario where the Timberwolves make it to the Conference Finals. How much of those questions were answered versus no, Minnesota was just able to exploit a Phoenix team that had a lot of holes. Despite the star power, Phoenix had a lot of holes. How much of it was Minnesota okay, they might actually got something and they figured this thing out, or just they were facing an inferior opponent and Phoenix, they were disguised as a wolf. They were a wolf in sheep's clothing.
I don't know how controversial this will be.
We're gonna get to, hey, by the way, we're gonna get to Durant. We're gonna get to all that.
Favorite player. But we are watching a better team than the 04 Pistons. So they can go to the finals. Honestly, if they play anybody in the East, I will probably favor them in the finals. I do think even if they lose to Denver, it's not a disservice to them. It's their first round wasn't a fraud. Denver can do something. The matchup is going to be important where they mitigate and take Jokic out. I mean, take Gobert out the paint, and it opens up a lot of stuff for their offense that these other teams won't be able to do. But can they beat Dallas? Yeah, I'd probably favor them with Dallas, honestly. Can they beat the Clippers? And Kawhi Kobe Jordan is not Kawhi Kobe Jordan, even if he's Kawhi Kobe Jordan? Yeah. Can they beat OKC? Can they? Yeah. They can. Now, OKC is very athletic, and they're going to get them moving a lot, more than even other teams. But this team is legit, man. Like, I do not think if they magically play Boston, like, I don't think Boston. So, the boys legit. They have to answer every playoff question. Every team has strengths and weaknesses and matchups. But this is a legit contender. This team is legit, and they're around for years to come. For years to come, they're around. So while these other teams are breaking up and stuff, these boys are here to stay.
Okay. I guess we get to Phoenix. Let's get to the Phoenix part of this. Because I think that's probably the most interesting part with Phoenix, where they made the Durant trade, right? And it's like, okay, you know, if you're the GM, if you're James Jones, if you're the owner, and Kevin Durant is on the market, and Kevin Durant, you know, put yourself, you know, he's coming from Brooklyn, and Kevin Durant basically wants to go to Phoenix. He basically closed the market off, and he said he pinpointed Phoenix. I want to go to Phoenix. I want to play with Devin Booker. Granted, a player of that caliber, you know, is going to probably take about three to four first round pick swaps, whatever, maybe a player or two. You do it, right? You do it. You get the pairing of Durant and Devin Booker. But then we soon get the Bradley Beal trade. And the Bradley Beal trade, back when it first happened, it's like, of course, you do it. You move off of Chris Paul. You kind of sever your ties with DeAndre Ayton. That kind of just salvaged itself. And you bring on a Bradley Beal that is, he's a really good third option. He is, as a third option, he is one of the best third options in the league, right? That's just the mindset that you would have as a GM. Bring those guys along. What does Phoenix do from now? Like, and tell me about Durant, because I'm a Durant guy. I love Kevin Durant and I love his game. But I think we have to have the conversation, or the uncomfortable conversation. Post torn Achilles, Kevin Durant, the GM, and you let me know if it's fair or not, but Kevin Durant, the GM, effectively cost and hindered Kevin Durant, the player, to actually win championships again. He hindered that. Kevin Durant, the GM, totally screwed up and messed up the chances of Kevin Durant, the player, to compete and win championships on the latter part, in the latter end of his prime. And I would also say he is not the same player. He's not the same player. Like, and granted, this happens often in sports where we see all-time great players and we know, okay, like, they're putting up these astronomical numbers, they're putting up these great numbers. They can't possibly be declining. And I think a lot of people had to come to grips with this with LeBron a few years back where he was averaging like 37-7. And it was like, well, LeBron's averaging 37-7. He can't possibly be declining. Meanwhile, the Lakers finished 11th in the West. So it's like LeBron's 37-7. That impact, that 37-7 ain't the same from several years back. It's a little different. And with Durant, I don't know. I mean, you watch his film. You know, you have ties with him. Am I off kilter here? Like, how do you evaluate Kevin Durant? I think the last time, because think about it. I've been really thinking about this, G.
This is complex.
In 2019, in that Houston series, he was averaging 35 a game. Great shooting splits, great shooting numbers. You can say what you want. He was playing at Golden State. He was undoubtedly, unequivocally the best player in basketball.
No, let's stop this. And I'm a pro Curry guy, but I think Curry was better. They don't beat Houston either one of those years without KD's isolation scoring versus that switching, versus that motion system. Houston switched and blew up all those actions and was physical, and Curry was not playing that good. Durant was the reason they beat Houston. And it's okay to feel like Curry's better, but people keep going too far and now I'm playing with my boy legacy. We not about to do that.
And that's what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to set the stage here. At that point, you have your Curry stands out there. But outside of that, and outside of probably the LeBron stands that I probably argue Bron at that point still. Durant is the best player in basketball.
Yeah, unless you're going to say
Kawhi. I mean, I'm saying, no, but before he won the championship, I'm talking about 2019, second round of the playoffs, before the injury, Durant was the guy.
You know who I am.
Exactly.
It's that year, yeah.
It's that exact year. Now, you fast forward, I would say you fast forward about 4 or 5 years later, the last time we seen something close to that guy that we're talking about was probably in that Milwaukee series, which is unfortunate because there's a lot of ifs and there's a lot of things we can kind of harp back on in that Milwaukee series.
Just get past it, bro.
Am I off kilter? I don't think Durant is Durant.
You absolutely right, bro. Like, you know that. You know why that Milwaukee series bothers me.
I know.
My PTSD right now.
I know. I didn't even want to bring it up, but it kind of, you know, it went in line with what I was trying to say.
Let me get into it. It's weird. Kevin Durant, the GM, part of me feel like has. When he hits, he's unlucky. But when he misses, it's like, yo, you need somebody to be like, don't do that. Like, for all the, I don't think Brooklyn was a failure because if we don't get a pandemic, they stay together. And that's probably the ring the second year. Let's even talk about the first year. It took Harden hamstring popping the first play. So Kyrie getting undercut by degree. It took Joe Harris forgetting how to shoot a basketball. And it also took his shoe size being too big for them to lose that series. And if they win that, they win the fight. So it's like, yo, I can't knock you for your process during that series. We go to the next year. That's the pandemic. They're not in the state of New York. We probably aren't having this conversation, honestly.
Yeah.
Because a lot of stuff changes. And even that year, the few games they played, they were Washington. Like, so it's like, I can't knock you for your process. You know,
you swept
by Boston.
You like the process of of that Brooklyn dynamic, the results just wasn't there.
Yeah, and you know, and that's just me, like, as a GM, as a future GM, as a future coach, is like, I have to adjust the process, and sometimes the results are just out of our hands. Like, it was so much, like, we can say, oh, he got swept by Boston. Boston made the finals. It was one of the greatest defenses of the modern era, and every game was close. So, again, I'm not knocking you for that. Now, what I do, even the next year, they were better. If him and Kyrie was on a roll, he was top two in the West. I mean, the East. Jimmy Butler flops and tears KD's MCL. A few weeks later, Kyrie asked for a trade. I wake up in the middle of the night and then see Kevin Durant's traded on my screen. It's like, yo, he was just super unlucky. So it's like, yo, now the Phoenix stuff. I think I told you about the guy, about Chris Paul being traded during the playoffs. Like, yo, he's not gonna be here much longer. Is what I can say. If you think,
oh yeah. You did. You said that. You did. Yeah, you said that.
And he was out right after the season.
Yeah.
And I think that was the biggest mistake, because Durant does that and CJ McCollum F's the league and make sure we get another Golden State. That CBA deal is also another reason why Durant is in the situation he's in. So you would have been better off keeping Chris Paul and Aiden. But I get Aiden was a crybaby, but the Chris Paul trade to me was I think this year's Chris Paul, they're way better, even with this year's Chris Paul, if he's healthy, because you just needed that floor generalship, and you got strapped because you was trying to do, maybe he was trying to do the Brooklyn thing again, but Beal wasn't Beal, right?
Yeah.
Beal was stupid. He wasn't nowhere near Kyrie that was in Brooklyn, let alone Harden. Devin Booker wasn't even Harden that was in Brooklyn that first year, where we forget Harden was in the MVP conversation after the Houston stuff had happened.
Yep.
So that's where we just forget it. Like, yo, so you tried to do that. This is where Durant needs a, no, that's not it. That's not it. So you want to blame him for Phoenix? Yeah. Like, you know, Chris Paul's out of there and stuff, and you're strapped around a big three that really is redundant, and the CBA also hurts you where you can't sign those supporting pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So, criticize him for the Phoenix stuff, yeah, and he's also kind of screwed where, does he know when you ask for the Brooklyn trade that, hey, this CBA is about to change the world, and not only, well, never mind, I can't even say that, because as Durant, your agent should have told you, when the team trades for you, they're not going to have nothing to mortgage their future. And if they get something else, you're super not going to have nothing around you. So, I guess once Kyrie asked for that trade, he was true. It's like,
I think Durant, man, the sad part about it is, he's still playing really good basketball, but that the explosiveness, not, he never relied on it. And I think people kind of, with these type of injuries, when players suffer these kind of injuries, and these players are not, they don't rely on their athleticism, people kind of take that and say, well, they don't rely on their athleticism, so the injury shouldn't affect them that much. No. Because looking at it, and I'm gonna keep an eye out, because depending on how Kirk Cousins come back from this particular torn Achilles injury, the players actually that don't rely on their athleticism and suffer these type of injuries, it hinders them more, because they were never athletic, physically gifted in the first place. So the mere fact that they have to try to topple that and try to overcome such a serious injury, it makes the injuries worse for them, I would say. That is what I'm trying to figure out. Because with Durant, yes, He's never been a guy that relied on, I'm quicker than you, or I'm faster than you, or I'm going to jump higher than you. No. But I think in little in moments, and I kind of see this within, you know, the mid-range game, you know, in terms of him trying to attack the basket, instead of him finishing full force, he kind of gets pushed. Kind of, he leans away. Like, a lot of that, I think, has to do with the torn Achilles injury.
And he barely can get there.
And he just can't get to those certain spots quick enough to beat his guy. So I'm gonna watch Kirk Cousins closely, because I think a lot of people, they look at, like, for instance, Aaron Rodgers, Kirk Cousins. A lot of people are like, man, they don't know how Aaron Rodgers is gonna come from the torn Achilles injury, because Rodgers is a guy that relied heavily on, or he relied not heavily, but heavily, but he uses his legs. He moves around. So a lot of people are questioning whether or not he can be that same guy. I think people have a lot less question marks about Kirk because he's a pocket guy. But I'm starting to not agree with that notion, and I'm starting to push back against that, because I would argue the less athletic guy has to overcome the injury more because they're less athletic. I don't know.
Or is it something like this? If you're not an athletic player, it takes a trained eye to see where it really hurts you at. Because a lot of people, like, you look at Durant, they'll be like, oh, look at his numbers post Achilles. They're still dominant. Or, you know, sometimes they try to argue they're even better. But if you know what you're looking for, you're like, this is not the same player from 2012. Like, this is not even 2012, KD.
Exactly.
So, like, yeah, you have to be a trained eye to probably see it with the less athletic players. But when the time comes, it will show. And it's shown time and time again with Durant come playoffs, like, outside the Milwaukee series. It's like, yo, even, like, you know, the Phoenix run. Yeah, he's put up kind of decent numbers, but it's like, oh, you can see. Even this series, you can tell. These numbers good, but it's not Durant. Like, you can see, like, where it hurts him at. It hurts him at. Even if it doesn't result in a shot attempt, it may just result in him passing the ball up.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. It's going to be very, very interesting, even in football, because, you know, I think A-Rod the GOAT, so I need my boy to come back.
Lakers-Nuggets, because this was a pretty interesting series. The Lakers in this series, they didn't play bad at all. I think they played pretty well. They played Denver pretty well. Especially compared to last year in the conference finals. I think they played pretty well. They led at halftime in all five of these games. Throughout the third quarter, especially in the elimination game, they seemed like they were in good shape until Denver kind of made their run in the latter part. What's your take on that series? And you kind of already hinted at Denver, you know, maybe, granted, they got through the Lakers. But that, I would argue that similar, if they come out with that same performance, I would argue that it would be a lot tougher to beat Minnesota. How did you view that series? What was your takeaways?
Even last year, yeah, they got swept. But even if Minnesota was Denver's toughest series, that was a very close second. It was a lot of swing factors and just greatness that, you know, shine, but that's what we asked for. This series, even coming into this playoffs, I told people, I said, the Lakers could beat everybody outside them. They just got screwed because they played a way better team first. And with, you know, Denver did have some, like, unlucky shot making and stuff, where they were just missing, like, very good looks at times and stuff. But I'm going to be honest, all this Darvin Ham stuff, is overblown to me. If you want to blame somebody for the Lakers stuff, let's start with the top and look at Ross Palinka and certain roster moves and stuff. And how you have to have D'Angelo Russell and Austin Reeves as your starting backcourt, so your perimeter defense is cooked.
Mm-hmm.
You have very few two-way players on your team. This is why Jared Vanderbilt, even though he was hurt when he was healthy, he becomes almost unplayable because you're not going to beat Denver by just making the game ugly, a smother, and double red series. And he's almost a liability on offense since the going this series. Anthony Davis played his ass off this series. Yeah. If he wasn't the best, he was the second best player this series. And I hope people don't forget how good he played this series. LeBron was solid, even though he had that one game where he stole it and stuff. And it was some fourth quarter thing. He was like, bro, what you doing? Like, you know, when he misses the open three, then Jamal Murray hits the game winner.
Yeah.
But it happened.
It's a make or miss league, yeah.
Yeah, they guarded Jokic as best as you can. Like, honestly, like, why don't we just shift to the fact, like, yo, we're watching one of the five, and in my opinion, arguably the greatest offensive player ever in Jokic. It's only so much you can do, bro. Like, they guarded them well. They guarded them well. You took Jamal Murray out. Jamal Murray was playing trash this series. They guarded them well. Like, it was, like, that's why they were up a lot of these series. It really wasn't Denver. Like, some Nuggets fans are like, Denver wasn't trying. No, the Lakers guarded them well.
Mm-hmm.
But from the Lakers just being old and tiring out, their offense was starting to get stagnant in the second half, too. And I think that had a lot to do with fatigue, because when they got Denver moving and were moving into the ball screens and stuff, they attacked Denver's defense very well. But the more the second half came, stuff started to get stagnant. And you need to attack Denver moving. Attacking Denver when they're moving is very different than trying to attack Jokic stationary. That's why I don't agree with the, oh, just run a pick and roll and attack him. It's like, you have to get him moving beforehand. And if you want to criticize Darvin Ham or the assistants for less creative actions, sure. But give him credit for having you in the game with an inferior roster. Give him credit for coming up with a great defensive system. I mean, it was only so much you can do. Like, anything else, you guard Jokic one-on-one? With who? Like, Anthony Davis, yeah, he can have some good possessions, but he's going to get killed in the board.
Right.
He's risking foul trouble. You can't do the little, they're so used to the, oh, is that Rui or whoever guard him and AD helps them. They've seen that from everybody. You know, versus Minnesota, this will be very interesting. But, they're too small. Like, Jokic was just starting to shoot over Rui before the help even came. And then AD and then Aaron Gordon on the putback. Aaron Gordon back cutting LeBron left and right. Like, it's, you just sometimes have to tip your head, and it just sucks. You know, even though you can say Darvin Ham isn't a great coach, he isn't even probably good, but are you really going to find better coaches? Like, that's going to make a difference for a Denver series? Like, just tip your head. You lost to the best team in the West. They could have beat anybody else. I would have picked them over the Clippers. I would have picked them over the Mavs. I would have picked them over the Suns. Minnesota, I would have picked them over. Though I probably think they would have lost. But they would have beat everybody but probably Minnesota and them. Okay, see, they, I was confident it was going to be five.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and you make valid points. I don't think Denver played their best, but they were playing their hardest, right? They were not playing their best or to their best, but they were playing their hardest. I think the Lakers they threw a lot of different matchup issues out there for the Nuggets, and for the most part, they did defend Jamal Murray well. Jamal Murray, he had a pretty good elimination game. I would say, like, from start to finish, that was probably his best game. But, you know, game two, where he hit the game winner, he was awful. That was probably one of the worst halves. That's probably one of the worst first halves I've seen him play. You make a good point. Give me your take on LeBron and his future, as a Laker in the league. Do you think he comes back? What happens with the situation? Because I recorded when Bronny announced that he was declaring for the draft. I did an episode based around it. And one of the major things that I talked about or pointed out was everybody's talking about what LeBron wants and what's best for LeBron. No one talks about what's best for Bronny. And the other point was, how far are the Lakers willing to bend over backwards and acquiesce to LeBron? Because it seems like, you know, they fire coaches, they make crazy roster changes. It's insane. Since LeBron has been there, you can just look at their roster from, he got there, what, 2018, 2019? You can just look at their roster from 2018-19, and then year by year by year, the roster all looks different. So that's my question. How much are you think the Lakers are willing to just continue to bend over backwards and acquiesce? And do they, at some point, do they say, we got other plans, we're not doing that?
LeBron has most team success with the Miami Heat because they had Pat Riley, who was willing to say no. And LeBron did not like that, but it was the best thing. Even though Pat Riley, you know, with the family stuff, I guess you could have gave him some. But for the basketball stuff, you know, it was good. You talk about the Lakers bending over. Austin Coop, Alex Caruso is gone because they had to pay Peyton Horton Tucker, who was a clutch merchant. They traded for Westbrook and got rid of KCP, who, guess who was on Denver? And Kuzma, he wasn't that good that playoff run for the championship, but still, a Swiss Army knife. Well, you got rid of Kuzma.
Right.
You make the Westbrook trade, and that ruins your team. You just get screwed from that point on.
I even think they jumped the gun with their roster changes after that Phoenix loss. Because I'm like, they were up 2-1 up until Anthony Davis got hurt, and then Anthony Davis got hurt and the whole thing just collapsed. But the roster construction of that team wasn't bad. It's just that you got unfortunate.
They make the finals again. If they don't change that roster.
Exactly.
They panic too much. And with LeBron, you got to tell them, I don't think LeBron's going anywhere.
Me either. Me either.
I don't think Bronny's an NBA player yet. I think he will be a good, he will be a good role player, like a very good starter, very good role player, maybe an all-star potential here and there. Not a superstar, but I honestly think putting Bron and Bronny on the same team would do more hurt than help. And even for Bronny's career, because once your dad is gone, and if you're not an all-star, Bronny seems obligated to keep you. Teams may do him grimy. Like, Bronny may be an NBA player that's not in the NBA when his dad leaves after a few years because he was there prematurely because of his dad.
Exactly.
Like, or just go transfer somewhere. If you feel like USC was that big of an issue, even though, bro, you really wasn't that, whatever. Just go transfer. Like, bro, it's okay. It's just so much more to hop the gun and stuff, and all this backstage politics and all is just coming out of the court. So I really don't think it's good. I just think, where you gonna go? Where you gonna go?
Yeah, I don't think he goes anywhere. I don't think it goes anywhere. I think more so, I'm like, man, the Lakers in, what, this is what, 6 years he's been a Laker, I would assume. The Lakers have just, they're doing a lot for a guy that's not even, I mean, if I'm being honest, he doesn't seem like a true Laker. They're doing a lot. They're doing a lot, and with the whole Bronny James situation and his son, it adds an extra layer. And it's like, I feel like the Lakers are like, they're talking themselves into doing it. Like, okay, we're going to really do this with with Bronny and LeBron and letting them play together. Maybe it's LeBron's last wish and this is just one last year. I don't know. I just think it's interesting because I saw a report. I said this about a month ago when Bronny declared. I was like, kind of seems like the Lakers are gonna, you know, they're gonna give in at some point. They may not want to admit it, and you know, depending on how the season plays out, they may not want to talk about it or admit it, or you may not see it reported. But I kind of had the mindset they were going to do this and acquiesce to LeBron. I saw a report, I think yesterday, where they said they're interested in granting LeBron's wishes. With drafting Bronny, so it's on the table. If you're asking me, I think it happens. I'm more like 65-35 that it happens versus it don't. It doesn't, right? I think it happens this year. And honestly, looking at the draft class, if this was the draft class, if there was any draft to take a swing on a guy that may not necessarily be ready, it would probably be this draft class. So,
yeah.
So, next series, Knicks 76ers. I feel like Philadelphia, you know, let me tell you why Philadelphia winning that game five and extending the series is bad for Philadelphia. It creates a sense of delusion that this series is closer than what it actually is. I think with Philadelphia winning, and Tyrese Maxey was awesome last night. I mean, his heroics was awesome. His shot making was awesome. I think earlier this season, we were talking about Tyrese Maxey and, you know, his ceiling and is he really going to take this leap? He's taking the leap. You know, he's played really, really well. He's been a steady diet for Philadelphia this past year. He's been the most consistent thing on that roster. But it creates this sense of delusion that we are closer to competing for a championship than they actually are. Because I like Maxey a lot. He's awesome. He's a dog. He's a killer. I love it. But this series has not been close with the Knicks. The Knicks are the better team. They're better constructed. I would even go as far as they're better coached. And the mere fact that they're up 3, they're down 3-2, it makes it seem like this series is interesting and close. But in actuality, you have a guy in Joel Embiid who I don't think at this point he hasn't proven to me that he can be a one on a championship caliber team come playoff time. Not necessarily during the regular season, but come playoff time, he hasn't shown that he can take his game to a whole nother level and be a one during the playoffs. And he's been hurt. He's often hurt, and that is the issue. You let me know. I mean, I think it's a little bit. I think it's creating this sense false hope, and kind of making the 76ers delusional with them extending this series.
I don't know, because consistency seems to be a thing with them. Because when Joel is on the floor, they are great. Like, okay, these guys are hooping. It's when he comes off that they're so freaking bad that it's like, yo, is this going to create a sense of stagnation for the organization where they don't fix the issues they probably should fix? Because we made the Eastern Conference Finals, coming back 3-1.
Right.
It's really a testament to Embiid's greatness more so than your roster being good. But what I can say is I do wonder what is the conversation if they don't blow game two?
Game two, I think.
Happen this and they're up 3-2.
Well, ask yourself, why did they blow game two?
Bruh, that looked like some high school, middle school, JV
Because I would argue some of that, a lot of that had to do with some coaching.
So
I get that point. Like, I'm all for teams and organizations and programs, and I'm all for those type of organizations thinking half glass full, because I'm a half glass full kind of person. But with Philadelphia, it just seems like the same story. And same story, different year, same outcome. I don't know. I can't necessarily buy into it. I can't buy into it.
I can disagree with that. Granted, and the same story really is, it's, this guy's hurt every year. And that's where the real conversation needs to come in.
Yes.
Is it ability why he can't be a one, or is it the fact that his body can't take it?
It's the Avella, and this brings up a good point, because I got two other players that I want to bring up in terms of their availability. It's not so much the ability and the talent's not there. I don't think he's a one because of the talent, or he lacks the talent. I don't think he's a one because he's not there, and he's consistently not there.
Year in, year out.
Yeah. I mean, not to get too much on Philly, but what's your view on that series?
The Knicks are the Steve Blake team, like the white boy who just gives all his effort. They're the modern 76ers in 01. And this is a perfect year to kind of make that run.
Okay.
Yeah. They're one of those teams where, like, I mean, he's not the playmaker. Their play styles are different, or let's just say he's the Jason Kidd of those gritty Nets teams.
Yeah.
They just need a star guard to go on the run. And which Jalen Brunson is doing, because at first I was like, ooh, he got it. And then he just started going crazy. Shout out to Dibs, because he's not a great offensive coach, but he is doing some better things to get Russ in some positions. They're trying to deny him and top block him, so they got him running through screens. Iverson cuts, all of that, to get him the ball and get him going downhill, attacking Joel better by setting the ball screens higher. The Clippers are crazy for letting Isaiah Hartenstein walk. Yeah, they just have a great, gritty team, and I think with Joel's injury, it also makes you like, yo, this is just annoying to face. And I do have a hot take about both teams.
Go ahead, give it to us.
And both the boys on the A game, and Boston better, I hope Joel doesn't just, you know, get better. Both of them teams can beat Boston. Would I bet that they beat Boston?
No.
Christoph Porzingis is hurt. I will take $20 and place my first bet that Philly beats them. And if KP is hurt, it can get more interesting with New York than it already is going to be, because New York, Boston's going to give you two games, and I'm afraid that New York can probably steal a game. But I don't think none of them guards. Boston's herky jerky and strength type of game. And subtle quickness in that first step, he's kind of unguardable, especially for Boston guards, because he's quicker than both of them. He's bigger than Drew. He's quicker than, and he's stronger than Derrick White. He's quicker than Drew. So he can attack them in a multitude of ways where they can't guard him. They won't be able to bank on guarding him. So I'll go as far as to say Boston already sitting on a 2-6 game series. And if KP's hurt, do we end up with an Embiid Jokic final?
Perhaps. I think I'm higher on Boston than you are. I will say that to your take. I think I am higher on Boston than you are. You're higher than Philly than I am. I'm kind of over the Philly thing. I'm not gonna lie to you, bro. I'm over Embiid and placing my eggs in that basket. Because I thought last year, you know, I hate to harp back on things, but I thought last year was the ideal chance and opportunity for Philly to get to the finals.
It was.
And they didn't. So I was like, you know what? I'm not gonna even continue to, you know, get my hopes up high for Embiid and Philly. I'm just not. Okay, speaking of injuries and stars being injured, Kawhi Leonard, obviously, since he's been a Clipper, this has been kind of the trend. You know, this past year, he had a really dominant regular season. And up until that injury in late March, he had played every game. And, you know, I don't know how this Clippers thing is going to end with Kawhi. I don't know how it's going to play out. But, man, it's starting to become one of those what if kind of things. Like, what if Kawhi was just healthy for one or two of these playoff runs? What could the Clippers actually do? Because, like I said, another dominant regular season where he's effective, he's efficient. He is still one of the best go get a bucket and then get a stop kind of guys. He's one of the best, if not the best, two-way player in basketball. Still. And then the injuries come up and pop up in the postseason. Like his body physically just can't handle it. And this might surprise you, but a guy that for the second straight year in a row, he's hurt. Giannis. I don't know how much of that is just unfortunate or is it a trend? I don't know. But give me your take on both of those situations. I know Milwaukee's kind of been polarizing this year too with, you know, the coaching change and obviously the acquisition of Damian Leonard and so forth. And things kind of really we haven't seen Milwaukee mesh as well as I think a lot of us anticipated. Start with Milwaukee and then we'll move our way to the Clippers.
Well, Milwaukee's problem is one, you trade for Dame, you give up all type of resistance for your perimeter defense, and that defense is your center determines the type of defense you can play 9 times out of 10. So they really have to play drop, but we drop for it also to be effective for the most part. Well, at least come playoff time, but the worse your drop big is, the more important point of attack defense is. Not that you have to be a perimeter stopper, but you have to be able to get over and just draw some resistance or get some really good test. You know what I'm saying? Giannis, you have Brook and Giannis, but you have just cones everywhere offensively. Chris Middleton is decent, but you can tell the injury still weighed the toad on him.
Mm-hmm.
Sidebar, it's crazy that Chris Middleton has better playoff stats than Jason Tatum right now. But that's neither here nor there. So then Dame has regressed. I thought none of this would matter if we was even getting last year Dame. But I will say this, even myself overlooked it. Dame's ability to make consistent reads when two is on the ball in the pick and roll, especially just subtle things like timing, delivering the ball slightly late and stuff, really hurts a lot of their possessions. Giannis is a average at best, and I really want to say below average screen setter. And screen setting is very huge for your guard success. Is very, you know, screen setters is very important. So Dame doesn't have any screen setters. Giannis, when he does finally set a good screen, isn't used to already playing that short roll, let alone if he's not always receiving the ball on time. And it's just a nasty multitude of things going on, funky fits. And it seemed like those two should be able to fit together. But this is why little things like screen setting, timing with passing and decision making is all very important. And also, this isn't the first if I recall. Even the playoff run, they made the finals, Giannis got hurt.
Yeah.
There needs to be conversations about, you know, that, you know, him also starting to be hurt more and more when you need him. He, like, talk about, is this 4 years in a row? Bubble?
No. Giannis got hurt in the bubble. The thing with Giannis is he got hurt in the bubble, and you're right, he got hurt in the finals run. He just plays through it, and then you have last year and now this year. So yes, that's 4 years in a row.
That's 4 years in a row that he's been got hurt in the playoffs. So yeah, you know, and we wanna, you know, start criticizing Jordan. The ring saved him from a lot of criticism that he probably should get.
Absolutely.
It's the ring. It's okay, but it's the Bill Walton. Yeah, yep. He was injury prone and all that. He got the ring.
Yep. And I don't want to forecast, but with Giannis, that's the difference between some of the universal love that Giannis gets and some of the probably like hate. I wouldn't even call it hate, but some of the negative connotations that come with Embiid, the ring saves Giannis. You're right. The ring saves him.
It does. And Kawhi,
Kawhi. I mean,
he's been hurt since the Spurs. Like, he has something degenerative in him where you really just hoping he can be healthy at the right time. And it sucks because all coming into the season, it was like, yo, I finally got to have my body right, got to get the proper off season, all that, you know, and it just sucks that we're here once again.
Should he retire? Because he's
still twofold about it.
Because he's turning into this guy. I mentioned a little bit, but he's turning into this guy where it's like, what if, like, because he's a 2-time champion, and then obviously his championship run with Toronto, pretty memorable. A lot of I think a lot of Kawhi stans bring that up as a point of reference. Like, hey, this guy, when he's on and healthy, he's as good as anyone in the league has to offer right now.
Right.
And I think that point is valid. There's a lot of evidence that points to that. So I think it's valid. But it comes to a point where I think the last time he was actually healthy in the playoffs, it was in the bubble. But I think ever since the bubble, he hasn't been healthy. Should he is retirement actually an option?
I'm sorry, I don't want to say retire because it sounds like I don't want to sound like Stephen A.
A lot of people killed Stephen A for it.
Yeah, it'd just be nasty and messed up because he can't control what his body. Now, you know, should he potentially be Brandon Roy instead of Stephen A? I guess it's just hard for me to say. He's so good that I believe. Like, it's crazy. But even with Roy, when he retired, you started to kind of see it hurt, like, start to hurt his game.
Mm-hmm.
But, bro, like,
it doesn't.
You don't see any regression.
Yeah.
Like, how can I fathom telling somebody that this great in his prime?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
To retire.
Yeah. I think that's the part that people, that the pro Kawhi people, and I'm not anti Kawhi at all. I like Kawhi's game. I'm just trying to add some surface level conversation. I think the pro Kawhi people look at that and like, okay, granted, yes, he's hurt. He's, you know, he consistently is hurt. Yes, and he goes through his knee issues and situations, but there is no drop-off, and when he is fully locked in and healthy, there's an argument to be had that he is still that two-way guy, the best two-way player that led Toronto you know, i.e. back to that 2019 championship run. You're right. You're right. There's no drop off. And I'm not even sure if you said to me, hey, Isaiah, I give you a healthy Kawhi Leonard. Name five players currently in the playoffs that's better.
It's not. It's maybe.
Two? I was thinking the two, maybe a Jokic. Who?
If you're high on Embiid.
I'm not high on Embiid. So I would, me personally, I would say there's potentially two guys that might be better. And one is, I was definitely going to say that. Jokic and then Luka. Maybe. And people, I know some people, if you're pro Kawhi, you would argue me down and say, well, what about the other side of the floor defensively? And then, like, okay, got a, probably got a point there.
I don't care what you say. Maybe with Luka, depending on how you feel about Luka's offense and contrast to Jokic.
Yeah.
Don't talk to me about defense.
Yeah.
Man. He ain't better than Jokic.
Yeah, but yeah.
The Luka and somebody ain't even the best player on their team right now in the playoffs.
Well, that's a good segue. That's actually a good segue. We're talking about Kawhi. If you're just now tapping in, we're talking about Kawhi, and you know, health. If the Kawhi stands, I don't know. I don't know if any Kawhi like fan club, but. The Kawhi stands out there, or people that's pro Kawhi, they may bring up the point that when he's healthy, fully healthy, there ain't too many players that's better than him in the postseason. The two guys that came to my mind, and you say if you're high on Embiid, whatever, cool. Jokic and Luka. Mavericks Clippers. I recorded an episode right after the playoffs had started, so like right after all the game ones, and my initial thought, I gave some like quick thoughts before I got into the rest of it and whatever. And my quick thoughts was, Jokic, still the best player in basketball. This Mavericks Clippers series is gonna go seven games. What's your thoughts on it? Because you said Luka hasn't been the best player on his team. Do you want to go more in depth into that?
We're starting to finally see the nooks and crannies in Luka's game that holds him back from being. You look at Luka numbers and somebody.
What is those holes that you're talking about? That's being exploited.
His inability to play off ball.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair.
Let's just go with offense. We know the defense. I'm not wrong. Inability to play off ball. His rim, I think because he's bigger, his rim pressure is kind of worse now.
It's inflated.
Yeah. That is this. Luka is great as high as an IQ he has. His decision making is kind of wonky at times, and it kills possessions to where. Whether he's getting frustrated throwing up a crazy shot or just throwing a crazy pass and leaving the turnover and stuff. And not only that, it's kind of interesting seeing when the Clippers or this is the second time I would say a team has a team has to just say, hey, we're just going to give you the switch that you want and go kill. Clippers like, no, we're gonna show and recover. We're gonna fight over these screens. Shout out to Terrence Mann, yo. He's doing a hell of a job fighting over screens. We have bodies for you. We are gonna play help. We're gonna gap off our guys and stuff. And Luka also, I don't know why not, because he has the ability to. He has the LeBron issue where he can play out the post great and just isn't the guy to. He just won't say, forget it for a series, throw it to me in the post, you're going to put out the post. And those little
absolutely.
Things versus high-level defenses start to show. And he's been mad and inefficient this series because of it.
Absolutely.
Because of it. Yeah, and those are the problems in his game that's holding him back from that Magic, Jokic, Braun level of Nash level of offense where, yeah, he has the counting numbers, but James Harden has the counting numbers.
Right.
So, yeah, and it's kind of crazy where Harden's like, hey, looking at him like, yo, Harden's going crazy this series. he's the best player this series.
Well, okay, because you're, I know you're a Harden guy. And I must admit, I will say this. This past Sunday, I think they played tonight, though. This past Sunday, Harden, that was the best playoff game, or one of the best playoff games I've seen Harden play. You say he's been playing, you say he's been the best player in this series? You said that?
Yes.
Okay. Give me your take. Give me your... Okay. Huh?
Him or Kyrie.
Kyrie's been, he was phenomenal in game four. I don't, or game five, whatever it was. It phenomenal. Give me your thoughts on this series. Who do you, it's tied 2-2. Who do you have winning it? Yeah, give me your thoughts and who do you have winning the series?
This is crazy because going into the series, I said, if Kawhi play, they gonna win. But if Kawhi don't play, he's not healthy. The Mavs don't play. And after four games, I don't know why, I'm kind of feeling like higher that the Mavs are going to lose no matter what. Because as I tried to tell people in the spaces, the Mavs are not going to have nothing for James Harden. And P.J. Washington is a little wing defender. Because he's guarding PG well when he's on him. And Derrick Jones is doing a solid job, too. Last year, and PG was just on the burner the first half. But they're not. PJ Washington isn't a guard defender. And Harden is obliterating Kyrie.
Everything.
And as I said, they're not going to have nothing to stop that pick and roll. Because he's going to get a good shot every time. As long as the screen is set cleanly. He's dissecting the defense. He's forcing switches with Luka's out there. You can't blitz him for real because, you know, he's going to make that pass. I think because of the defensive flexibility of this series is why the Clippers are going to win. Whether it's 6 or 7, who knows, but because they are so versatile defensively, and Ty Lue is doing an amazing job. He adjusted from game 3,
okay,
where he kept trying to force attack Luka on the ball. He started attacking Luka and Kyrie even with off-ball stuff. So the Norman Powell is getting shot, and it's not even directly on Luka. It's breakdowns on Luka. It's just dead in the third, and Luka's, it looks like he's getting worn out. And Kyrie's scoring a lot, but Kyrie's also, like, even if I remember correctly, last game he had 7 turnovers.
Yeah.
Like, you win off that.
Yeah.
Possession. Matter.
Okay. You got the Clippers win that series. I feel the same. Harden.
It feels wrong, though.
It does.
Can't beat Denver. They can't beat Denver OKC this Clippers, but Dallas can.
Yeah. That Dallas, and I wish this was like a second round matchup, not a first round matchup, because both of these teams feel like they can win, especially the Mavs, the new look Mavericks after the trade deadline. They feel like they can win multiple playoff series. But they just ran into, I mean, unfortunately, they ran into the Clippers in the first round.
Again.
And again, in the first round and not like in the second round of the conference finals. But I got the Clippers. I like the Clippers in this series. Paul George was excellent. Harden was excellent. With the Mavericks, I don't like what you can only hide Luka Doncic so much on defense.
Yeah.
Like, I saw that in the fourth quarter. Harden had a really good fourth quarter in game four. And a lot of that, like, I think the key to, I think we, most of us kind of know, like, the key to kind of neutralizing Harden is slowing him down, forcing him to go right. And even when he went right on Sunday, he would get back to that left hand, and it was just.
So what he said about that?
What did he say?
He said, "Yo, he basically told them, I know y'all game plan is to force me right. All I'm gonna do is blow by you right and go shoot a floater with the left." That was basically what he said. And Jason Kidd said, "He's not changing the game plan, so do what you want with that."
Well, there that goes. But, like, I don't know how, if I had a dollar every time he hit that left-handed floater on Sunday, I mean, he was really good. Like, and it's not just about the points, because I know he had two 40-point games last year versus Boston in the second round, and he essentially had won Philadelphia two of those three games in that series. But, man, like, just the efficiency, the playmaking, the quick, decisive decision making, that made me this is one of the best playoff games I've seen Harden play in a minute. Like, in terms of decision making, being able to get to the cup, that reminded me of like some of his OKC days when he used to come off the bench and he used to just be instant offense. That's what it kind of reminded me of. I haven't seen that quality of Harden as a scorer and a decision maker in the postseason like that in a minute. Your thoughts about Boston? Because it seems like you're I give you my thing about Boston. I think the only team that can match up with them, if we're talking about starting fives consistently, the Nuggets can match up with the Celtics starting five. I think outside of that, I don't think no one can put out a better five than what Boston puts out on the floor. And I honestly think Boston, when they're on and they're clicking and they have everyone healthy, I don't think there's – I think they win the NBA championship this year.
Boston is just inconsistent. Like, they're a model of consistent inconsistency. And four rounds of that is just my theory. You can't win a championship like that. It's hard to win a championship at every round. You're guaranteed to give up
a game.
Probably two games.
Definitely two.
So, like, how can you win like that? They still have some passing issues. They still have some Jason Tatum up in hot and cold issues. And now KP's injury is lurking. So what are you gonna do? What are you gonna do when a high level competition comes and you at the in the finals and you? I mean, I don't know any championship teams that do that.
Well, okay. Who's their toughest matchup out east? Who would be their toughest matchup out east as we sit here today?
New York.
That series goes, what, six games maybe?
Yeah, definitely six.
Okay. Not bad with that. I honestly just don't think no one beating Boston East. I don't see it. I don't see it at all. You disagree with that? The way how Denver's playing, I think Boston beats Denver.
Yeah. Denver doesn't even make the finals. So you see Denver in the finals. This isn't the Denver that you get what I'm saying? Like, okay. This ain't the Denver that you're going to be playing.
That's fair. That's fair. And I would agree with that because they're not playing good basketball right now, like at all. I'm even questioning them coming into this Minnesota series. But
yeah. I am too. I don't know, if you put a gun to my head, I probably favor Minnesota as of how they're playing right now. But if I just look at how Denver could probably turn up and counter that, that will probably say Minnesota probably win.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That would sway me. If you told me that Denver plays a little bit better defense, or they get some more bench production than what they got from their bench in this round one series, then I think I would quickly flip.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to get into?
Man, this has just been a great playoff. Who do you think coming away with MVP?
League MVP?
Yeah.
They probably give it to Jokic. Who do you think I should? Shea.
Wow, that's who I strongly think is getting gas in it.
Really?
Yeah.
I think Shea or Luka has a better argument. Why do you think he's getting gassed?
I think Shea is getting the most surprising award and not the actual MVP award.
Okay, who's your MVP and why do you think Shea is getting gassed?
Because that OKC team is very good. They actually have one of the actual few real spacing centers. It's a bunch of centers that can shoot, but I'm talking centers that can shoot in volume, not the Brook Lopez that can make one a couple of games, but the ones that can make it in volume. Chet is that. They have the only team probably besides maybe Denver that has a bunch of guys that can shoot, pass, and dribble and defend. So we're saying, oh, they're young. Who cares how young they are if they can hoop, bro? They have a multitude. They have one of the best depth in the league. So, yeah, oh my gosh, they're young. And Shea's the superstar, only all-star. But it's like, bro, let's stop acting like this team isn't very freaking good. Any superstar with this team does this. And I'm just going to say this, and I know it's probably unpopular, but I want people to one day go and research Denver's offense and numbers with Jokic off the floor and compare that to OKC and Luka's teams with their stars off the floor, and then tell me how much is it really that Jokic has more help or the best starting lineup. Or is it that he just enhances the parts around him that well to the point where they can be however worse with him off the floor and they still are so good with them on the floor that it still results in wins? That's just some food for thought I want people to really think about.
Okay, so you're saying – so your argument is the OKC team, you feel like people are – downplaying, I'm not even going to bring up SGA in it, but they're downplaying the skill set of OKC's young talent. And we're just looking at the young part and forgetting that, okay, they're young, but they're talented as fuck. So who cares about the age? I would say to that, yes, they're young. They're talented. I like Chet a lot. I was honestly surprised that he fit. Like, okay, for instance, why do you think Chet was so efficient?
Because Chet is. Why was Chet so efficient? You want me to be honest? Is this in comparison to Wimby? Is this where this
leads? Well, it could vary depending on what you say. I could go down that route. So yeah.
why can't people just accept that Chet came in as a more polished offensive player than Wimby? And some of that had to do with Wimby playing the four, but Wimby still had some deficiencies and flaws and still has some in his offensive game.
Okay. I seen the route you took.
Not saying the supporting cast didn't help, though. It helped greatly. But I even if I take the team and I'm just looking at them as players, I think Chet right now is actually a better offensive player outside of passing and playmaking, maybe. But Chet's a way better shooter. He's a better ball handler. Like, but Chet also had a year of NBA. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, this isn't a rookie really that we're comparing. Like,
he's masquerading as a rookie. Yeah. I get that point, and I would say yes. So I think Chet is a more consistent shooter. Both of them have really good shooting touches, but I think Chet is a more consistent shooter, especially from behind the arc. Better ball handler. I will give you that. I think the spacing of OKC and the attention that SGA is able to draw, I think that had a lot to do with Chet's efficiency. Like, if Chet was on the Spurs, and I hate to do this because it's so like it's like barbershop talk or whatever, but I think it does look a little different. I don't know, even with the more polished and refined offensive game or offensive tools, I feel like the efficiency wouldn't be as high. I also look at Jalen Williams. You think, okay, answer this for me too. This is another question. And it's, you think Jalen Williams is a legitimate two on a championship team right now?
No.
Okay. Well, I will say with Jalen,
they just have a very good team all around. But we're talking like number two, like a Kyrie and all that. Like, you get like Booker, Kyrie, like,
I mean, well, Jamal Murray is in that class too, right? Like,
do you want my real opinion?
Oh my God, yeah.
I think Jamal Murray isn't a real number two. He's just a number two because Jokic is that good.
Okay, so you're really swinging for Jokic and this MVP.
I think Nikola Jokic is the third to fifth greatest basketball player we've ever seen. Well, not greatest, best basketball player we've ever seen. I think he's better than Shaq was at his best. I don't think he's better than LeBron or Jordan. He may be better than Kareem. So, yeah, at worst four, I think he's better than peak Steph. That's how good I think Nikola Jokic is.
Okay. And I'm not mad at it. And I think I unequivocally agree that he is the best player in basketball right now. But we're just talking about MVP.
I think he was the MVP this year.
Well, I thought he was the MVP. I thought he was the MVP last year. And they just gave it to him.
Oh, no. He should be going on four in a row.
Yeah.
And if we really being honest, we can't. Let's just think about this. The way Denver plays, can they play that same way with Jokic off the floor?
No.
The way Dallas plays, can they play that same way if you keep Kyrie on the floor without Luka? Not as good, but can they still have success?
Success as in what? What are we measuring? Like, we're talking about in a stretch of a game or stretches throughout a season?
For those minutes,
okay.
Can they outplay the opponent?
Yes, they can, but I would argue, or I don't know, and I don't know if this is statistically correct, but I would argue that they don't even win. Like, yes, they're capable, but I don't know if they actually do.
Women lie.
What does the Thunder look like without SGA on the floor?
I That's a very good question. That's a very good question.
And he played, and he was awesome in this series versus New Orleans.
What are we looking at, all year or just playoffs?
Well, all year. And if we're talking MVP, just all year. Yeah.
All year, they're half a point positive, so I'm not going to be nasty like that. They're half a point positive.
Okay.
With, yeah, and then Denver is like, all year, they're negative -8.
Okay, but there is a gap. There is a gap. Okay.
Yeah, like, you're going like, Shea is, they're plus 11 with Shea on the floor and still half 0.5 positive with him off the floor. With Jokic on the floor, Denver is plus 11, but they're dropping all the way past 0 to negative -8.
Negative -8, yeah.
With, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's supporting.
And that's what makes you downgrade Jamal Murray.
Honestly, yeah, because a lot of his Jokic off the floor stuff ain't really, you know. The defense, I think actually defensive, you could say it's probably worse than it probably should be because the lineups are more defensive slanted. But I would say like the defense kind of keeps them from going in such a drought that Jokic should come back in and close it if we close, just run it up. You get what I'm saying?
Okay. But yeah, that's who I got for MVP. I think Jokic wins it. I would probably lean SGA, but not mad with it. I'm not mad with it at all. I'm not mad. What?
Oh, I'm not mad at either of the three wins
because
they all deserve it.
Yeah. Last quick thing before I let you go. I'm gonna go back to Durant and Phoenix. What's the next move? What should happen? Should they bring it back? Should they bring the core back? Try to fill in some of those gaps, add some size, add some toughness, add, you know, floor general, or should they trade Durant back to? Should they trade Durant somewhere else?
Trade him back to Brooklyn. I'm tired of watching my kill movie. But you're stuck with Durant, kind of. Because even, well, I say that you're not stuck, but you giving up Durant, Beal, and Frankel. I'm going to say in a popular opinion, and we being real, you only got two options. You got to pick between Booker or Durant.
I agree. You can't move Beal.
Yeah, if you're stuck with Beal, move Booker.
Yeah. That is the uncomfortable conversation that must be had in Phoenix. You can't move the most inferior player. You would have to move one of the two top guys. And it's not because, well, granted, Beal is inferior to those guys, but then also Beal's contract and the no trade clause, he's kind of locked there. The other two, they're locked there too, but there's more wiggle room and flexibility.
Yeah, and like that deal. Why does he have a no trade call?
Yeah. What
makes it worse?
Well, that's a whole different conversation about those supermaxes. When those teams give out those supermax contracts, and they, you know, and usually it's the bad teams. It's the teams that's in that middle tier where they have this star player who may not be like a top 10, maybe not even a top 5 guy, but they're like top 15. And they hit those certain milestones in order to be eligible for the max contract, and then they get it, and then they add all this other shit into it, like no trade clause. Like it handicaps teams a lot. I agree.
You could have got rid of it when you traded thirsty. That's thirst.
Phoenix?
Yeah, that's their owner being thirsty. Getting it done by any means necessary, which was kind of reported in The Athletic that James Jones really wasn't on board with the deal.
It seemed like a owner kind of move, like an owner overreaction, emotional. Like it seemed like that Beal trade seemed like that move. And I'm not going to lie, I thought the Beal trade would work. I'm not going to sit up here and say, like, man, Bradley Beal this, Bradley Beal that. I did think it would work. But Phoenix lacked in some of the reason why they lacked in filling in the holes of their roster is because they just couldn't. And those trades handicapped them. So, it definitely felt like this was like an ownership call. This felt like an ownership call right there for Phoenix.
Yeah, and look at where they got him.
Second round exit and a first round exit. Who? Okay. Well, you know what? I won't even do that. I'm going to just wrap it up right here. I will bring you back on soon to give, like, I don't want to let you give your final take. I will actually let things simmer down, play out. But I'm gonna wrap it up here. Shout out to my guy, No Layups Najee, for coming on. Like I said, I bring you back on. So we'll talk more as, you know, the playoffs continue to go further and further. And I was gonna ask you for your finals prediction, but I won't do that. I will let the series. Yeah, we'll be back soon. I'll leave there with a cliffhanger. But thank you guys for tuning in, tapping in with my guy, Najee. I'll be sure, as you heard him, if I know, I have Najee, I don't know if you know, but I've attracted, you know, quite a few new listeners. Shouts out to you guys. No, but engagement, you know, you guys, I press about engagement. So leave some comments, leave some ratings. Let me know. We can have, actually, you guys can leave some questions we can answer for the next time he comes on, because I want him to come on soon. So next time he comes on, we'll answer some of you guys' questions and so forth. So be sure to do that. I will leave all of his social media handles in the description below. But check that out. Tap in with my guy. And thank you, Najee, for coming on, bro.
Anytime, my boy.
Sure. Yes, sir.